You set the gold standard for your business. Your website should do the same. Wix puts you at the helm so you can enjoy the creative freedom of designing your site just the way you want. Want someone to bounce your ideas off? Talk with AI to create a beautiful site together. Whatever your business, manage it from one place and tie it all together with a personalized domain name. Gear up for success with a brand that says you best. You can do it yourself on Wix.
Plenty of powerful things have happened out of spite throughout history. So, hello and welcome back to the Plugged In Podcast, a weekly news show all about the future of transportation. I'm Patrick George, editor-in-chief of Inside EVs.
And I'm Tim Levin, senior reporter at Inside EVs. On this week's episode, why the Lucid Gravity is the most impressive EV I've ever driven, how Subaru is finally getting serious about EVs, and a new bill that aims to ban Chinese cars in America. But first, how are things, Patrick?
Man, I'm good. I always complain about the weather on this podcast, but we had a snowstorm over the weekend and a power outage. And this was like early on a Saturday morning, and I was so desperate for coffee, I used my EV, my Kia EV6, to make myself a cup of coffee. I plugged the coffee pot into the V2L port and made the coffee that way in the trunk of my car. Because I'm a genius. I'm one of history's greatest geniuses, if we're being honest. And I was really proud of myself for figuring that out. So, hell yeah, Kia EV6.
Dude, that's awesome. That's one of the unsung, I think, benefits of EVs is like the fact that you could just have a household outlet in your car. Have you used that for other things like, you know, before that?
No, I've had plans to, like, I've thought about like going, like making a video where I go out into a field and I plug everything like a power strip into the V2L adapter. Like that's an adapter that goes into my charging port. You press a power button on there and then plug in whatever you want the car to power, and voila, electricity. So I thought about just like going out to a field and just like plugging like a Wi-Fi hotspot and like a popcorn maker and a TV and a PlayStation and just like having like a time out in the middle of nowhere and with my car. But that would require a lot of time that I'd never seem to have. So
just see how much, like how many microwaves it takes to completely deplete your EV6's battery.
Ooh, that's good. That's a really good use of that car. Yeah, just run dozens of microwaves until the fire department shows up. It'll be awesome. How about you? How are things on your end?
Things are good. My cats are literally just like causing an absolute. Maybe you heard that. Cats are going crazy. So, the family is struggling, but otherwise things are good. Personally, things are good. My children, not so much.
Listeners to the podcast may not realize how much pet sound mitigation happens. Like, it's our producer Mike Perkins. This is like 85% of his job is like countermeasures against my Pomeranian. Or there he is. There he goes, right there. You see what we have to live with? We're gonna even cut that out now. You get one dog. That's it. Anyway, let's talk about EVs, shall we? We got some cool stuff going on. First and foremost, you finally drove the Lucid Gravity, which is one of the most exciting new debuts of the year in this space, the long-awaited SUV from Lucid. It looks awesome. You drove it a few months ago, very briefly, and thought very highly of it. Now you got more seat time, and what'd you think, Tim?
Yeah, it was really exciting. I think before I get into the Gravity, I wanted to just back up and give people a little bit of the backstory on what Lucid is and why we talk about it. So Lucid is an American EV startup that's actually been around longer than I think most people realize. It was founded in 2007 as Ativa, which was more of a supplier of electric powertrains. It became Lucid Motors in 2016, and it launched its first car, which was the Air, in 2021. Up until earlier this year, it was run by a guy named Peter Rawlinson, who was the chief engineer for the Tesla Model S, Tesla's first like real mainstream car after the Roadster. And the Air was a big deal in a few ways. It was and is the longest range electric vehicle you can buy in America. Yeah. It landed at 520 miles of EPA range, super fast charging, super efficient, super high performance in basically every way. And it kind of landed Lucid on the map as this company that is super innovative and makes like some of the best electric vehicle technology probably in the world. Its yeah. cars are made at a factory in Arizona, and it is a public company now. It is majority owned by the Saudis. So that's kind of some of the backstory on Lucid.
I feel like you also have to kind of introduce that brand a little bit, which is like, we're going to go into this. This is kind of part of their problem. The car is phenomenal. I don't think it's nearly as well known as Rivian even, and it's like definitely not as well known as Tesla. And like, you even put this in your review, like some officials of the company were like, well, we wish it was a little bit better known than it is, but they don't have that kind of Elon Musk-ish swagger. Every time I see that, I mean, like, for better or worse, right? Like, Elon's yeah. star celebrity status a decade ago helped put that brand on the map. But like, when I see a Lucid out and about, like a Lucid Air, I'm like, oh, that person knows. Like, that's probably one of our readers or listeners for one. It's like, oh, if you know, you know. But they got to go beyond if you know, you know, to be successful in a mainstream sense. And this Gravity is the one that's supposed to do it, right, man?
Yeah, exactly. I think well said. The Air is an amazing car, but it never really hit the kind of sales figures that Lucid wanted it to. They sold around 6,000 of them in 2023, a little over 10,000 of them last year. And like, that's good for a completely brand new car company, maybe, but that's not what you need. A lot more than that to be like a real major car company that's actually profitable.
Yeah.
And Lucid hopes that the Gravity will basically, you know, put it on the path toward that profitability. Gravity is a 7-seat, 3-row SUV, much more popular kind of form factor than the Air, which is a sedan. And the idea is that it'll appeal to a lot more regular people who aren't just like EV nerds who want the longest range car, like people who maybe just like want a great family SUV, right? And just to give like some top line sort of specs, the Gravity debuts in Grand Touring trim, which is the launch edition that goes on sale for real later this month. It starts at $95,000, has a 450-mile range, more than just about any other electric SUV that you can buy. Super high-powered 400-kilowatt charging, 828 horsepower, 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. On paper, this thing is an absolute monster.
Yeah. It's just amazing the specs on these EVs. I mean, just like, I remember like getting into cars as like a teenager in the 90s and the aughts, and like the supercars I grew up with look like Toyota Corollas compared to this like giant family SUV that you just drove, like outclassed in every single way. I mean, it's bananas. But you know, paper only tells us one thing. You finally got to like drive it for real. And what'd you think?
I was super impressed. This vehicle like completely blew me away, I think, for a few reasons. I think you go to these drive events or you read press releases of cars, and car companies basically always claim that their car is great at everything. They're like, it's dynamic, it fits everything, it fits your whole family.
It's sporty dynamism.
Yeah, sporty. Like, in general, that is never the case. Like, these cars are always bad at something, good at something else, okay at everything. The Gravity actually is really good at pretty much everything. You get it out on the road and it drives like a much smaller, much sportier car. It handles extremely well for being a big SUV. It's super quick with that 800 plus horsepower, 900 plus pound feet of torque. It just like absolutely rips your face off. And yet it also, like I said, can seat 7 people, carry all your stuff. It's like amazing how much space they carved out of this thing. So it's this really kind of unique combination of being extremely practical and also extremely fun to drive. Like, genuinely, you know, all these car companies will say, our car is fun to drive. Oh, take it to take it to that twisty back road on the weekend and like, you'll have a little fun. That's like almost never true. This thing actually drives like, they call it a 7-seat supercar. Like, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, obviously, but like, it handles like an actually fun enthusiast car, and yet it is a 7-seat family SUV. It's crazy.
I'm happy to hear that, and I also believe you. In your review, you had a great line. I confidently say what's been kicking around my brain since December. The Gravity is the most impressive all-around electric vehicle I've ever experienced. And I read that, and I was like, I believe you, because when we were doing the Breakthrough Awards last year, you know, our big end-of-year testing, and I was in the Lucid Air sedan, I was like, is this the best EV I've ever driven? I was like, kind of, yeah, actually.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I read that review when I was writing mine, and it kind of reminded me how great the Air is. And this is like the Air, but bigger. You know, it's kind of like all the great things about the Air, but in a much bigger package, holds more stuff. It charges faster. So, yeah, like when you consider all around EV specs, this is pretty hard to beat.
And you also I don't know if these two compete with each other. Like, what kind of crazy person would compare the two, like shopping wise? But you also just drove the electric Escalade, which you loved, and we both love the Escalade because we're, you know, blue blooded patriotic Americans. But how does this Gravity compare to the Escalade? Because like these are two very different approaches to making an EV here.
Yeah, I mean, I think loved is a strong word. I liked the Escalade. I don't know, like, I would never buy it. It's a gigantic, really expensive vehicle. It is really comfortable, so I'll give it that. But like, I think that comparing these cars really helps explain how special the Gravity is specifically. You know, they are kind of competitors. They're both big three-row electric luxury SUVs. But I like the Lucid approach here a lot more. Like, it's a much more elegant and much more sophisticated way of making a big electric SUV. Like, the Escalade is basically just brute force. It is a gigantic vehicle with a gigantic battery, and that gets it to its 460-mile range estimate. But this thing also weighs like 9,000 pounds. It has a 200-plus kilowatt-hour battery, way bigger than what you get in, like, your normal, like, you know, Tesla Model 3 or your Kia EV6.
Yeah, it's a huge battery in that Cadillac. Yeah, huge.
Yeah. And then you look at the Gravity, and it's a lot smaller. It's a lot better packaged, a lot more efficient. It also gets 450 miles of range, so almost the Escalade. But its battery pack is 123 kilowatt hours, which is, like, also big, but not Escalade big.
Yeah.
And that means it's, like, way more fun to drive. It's 3,000 pounds lighter. The Gravity is 3,000 pounds lighter than the Escalade.
That's a whole car. Jesus.
Yeah.
Shouldn't blaspheme on air. Sorry. This is going to come out around Easter, but I didn't realize it was that big a difference. I apologize to everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a whole Honda Civic lighter. And that means that, they can make it drive way better. Like, it doesn't drive like a boat, you know? And so... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say the best way I can describe this to people, if you're kind of learning the nuances of EVs, like the Gravity wins, the way Lucid does things, aerodynamics, better battery chemistry, better electric motors. And I think the difference in like layman's terms is like the Escalade has a lot of range because it has like the biggest like quote unquote gas tank possible. And the Gravity has all that range because it's just a better car with better technology. Like that's the difference between the two. Like one of those... Not to dig on General Motors, because they're actually doing really well at this stuff. One of those is the brute force approach. And then the other one is like finesse and technology. And everything is so cutting edge to be as efficient as possible, you know?
Yeah. And a smaller battery also means way faster charging. So like, yeah, you match. Like they both have that 400 plus miles. But like you can fill a smaller battery pack probably faster than you can fill a gigantic one. And so, yeah, I mean, the Gravity, you know, Lucid, I get the impression that Lucid is a company that's basically run by freakishly talented engineers. And like, this is the product of that. This is what happens when you listen to the engineers, I guess. And we'll get into it later. Like, who knows if that makes a great business, but it definitely makes a really incredible product.
Yeah, that's kind of my big question with this thing. Like, it's, you know... they had the air that we tested, the air sedan we tested for Breakthrough Awards was the Air Pure. The quote-unquote entry-level Air was my favorite of all of those lineups. And that was $69,000 or $70,000. So it ain't cheap. And, you know, this one you tested was $96,000. Like, this is still an expensive luxury car. And my question to you is, do you think people are going to buy it?
Yeah, I think that is the big question. I don't know. I think it definitely has more appeal than the Air. Like, the Air is a incredible luxury sedan, but people want to be able to carry around a bunch of crap and a bunch of people. So just by virtue of that, I think the Gravity will like land on more people's radar than the Air. But at the same time, like, the marketing thing has been their issue. Like,
yeah,
people just don't know. Not enough people know what Lucid is. I also think they've kind of struggled. Like you said, Rivian has way better name recognition. And I think it's kind of because they've created, they have like a really strong identity, right? Rivian's all about like being rugged, getting out into nature. It's this like Toyota, you know, 4Runner type sort of vehicle. Lucid, it sort of struggles with like, what exactly is it, you know? So I think they're going to have to overcome that and really, you know, do a big kind of smart marketing push to actually get people to recognize that this brand exists and that people should buy cars from them.
This is more just like fictional in my mind, but I think there is some grounding in reality. I always got the sense like the Lucid Air sedan came to be because like Peter Rawlinson, their old CEO, like hated Elon Musk and wanted to make a better Tesla Model S. And it's kind of what happened, but also it's like, can you build a business off of that? And I don't know. You know, plenty of powerful things have happened out of spite throughout history. So I don't know. I think the Gravity SUV, I think you're going to sell a bazillion of them out where you live because you're in the Bay Area.
I think
you're going to see those things everywhere where you are, you know. Rest of the country, maybe it'll sort of trickle to us. I bet we'll see some in New York because there's always... I'm surprised the number of EVs I see in New York City specifically now. And you know, there's a lot of money that other people have in NYC. So I'll bet they'll be out there and maybe move into the middle of the country later on, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. I see tons of Rivians. California, I would bet, is Rivian's biggest market. So I bet we'll start seeing Gravities out here too. I think one of the things that's a big unknown is the design, and I'm curious what you think about it, but like in person, you look at this thing and it is very much not the standard like upright boxy, you know, SUV shape like a Rivian or a Range Rover or a Volvo or whatever. And I do wonder if that's going to work against this. Like there was a Toyota Sienna in the parking lot of the hotel where
I see where you're going with this.
Where this drive event happened. And I was like, huh. I was like, they kind of have exactly the same silhouette. I haven't put them up like side by side, but like by vibes, this thing really has the shape of a minivan. And I think it looks cool, but it does have that shape.
The M word gets tossed around with the Gravity a lot. And that's like the least sexy word in cars. And nobody wants to use the word, the M word. It's like all those years in like the aughts where like Ford would be like, oh no, it's not a minivan. It's a active activity vehicle or something like that. It's like, sure, man. Like that was so toxic. They couldn't even call it that. But I remember we've asked like the designers at Lucid, like Derek Jenkins and about this before. And it's a beautiful car, but he's like, look, man, you want an SUV that's like hyper efficient, hyper aerodynamic. Like that's the shape you're going to get. It's rounded off and it's smooth and it doesn't look like a brick. So it's like, is it kind of minivan-ish? Yeah. But also like minivans are great and they're unbeatable as family vehicles. So maybe just people should just lean into it a little more, you know?
Yeah, totally. It's like, I asked him that at the event last week and he was like, look, it's function ahead of form, right? Like it is like, if you want as much space as possible in this car and if you want it to be super aerodynamically efficient, that's what it's going to be like. It's going to have kind of a cab forward design, super short hood. Like it's not going to look like an Escalade. And there are clear benefits to that. But I just wonder if that'll resonate with people, with enough people.
Yeah. Yeah, sales are going to be interesting. I'm really excited to drive one at some point this year. That's high on my list. So I don't know. Lucid is still a small team. They have a very well-pocketed owners, but it's a small team. They punch way above their weight class in technology. It's the American EV technology leader right now, and I my hat's off to them for like making a product that sounds really awesome. So we love to see it.
What's the difference between DIY and doing it yourself? It's the difference between a part-time passion and a full-time business. Wix gives you the power to turn your passion into a moneymaker. With a website that fits your unique vision, let your ideas flow with AI that guides you, but keeps you in the driver's seat. Manage your business from one dashboard and keep it growing with built-in marketing features. It's time to turn your daydream into your dream job. Go to Wix.com. You set the gold standard for your business. Your website should do the same. Wix puts you at the helm so you can enjoy the creative freedom of designing your site just the way you want. Want someone to bounce your ideas off? Talk with AI to create a beautiful site together. Whatever your business, manage it from one place and tie it all together with a personalized domain name. Gear up for success with a brand that says you best. You can do it yourself on Wix.
Well, moving on, a rare thing has happened this week, which is the New York Auto Show is taking place right now. There was news at the New York Auto Show, you know, and all of these like big auto shows in America, like L.A., Detroit, Chicago, New York, they don't produce nearly as much news as they used to in recent years. But this year there was a lot. And I feel like the last time there was a lot of news at the New York Auto Show, people were still actively looking forward to new Kanye West albums. It's like been that long. So that was cool to see, you know?
Yeah. And the big surprise that I certainly didn't have on my bingo card was Subaru. Subaru unveiled two new EVs this week at the show. I'm a Subaru guy. I come from a Subaru family. So it was nice to see this.
I didn't know you were a Subaru guy too. We got to talk about this on the episode a bit, but I used to own a WRX. So next time we hang it, we should get like the flat brim caps and like vape together or something like that.
Yeah. Crushing monster.
Yeah. Yeah. Just what the things that Subaru guys do. No, it's funny to me because like Subaru's always been a brand that seemed like it would really do well if it took EVs seriously. Cause it's, you know, the buyers are really into like nature and the outdoors and exploring, and they're really kind of environmentally minded, and like the WRX and STI crowd, like they're really into performance. Like there's a lot of synergies here, but you know, two things is one, it's a Japanese car company and that whole country is a lot more EV skeptical than the rest of the world. And two, it's a tiny company. Like they print money selling like Outbacks and Crosstrek in America, but it's a really small operator. And so they've kind of hitched their wagon to Toyota to make their EVs. Like they've been sort of rebadging the Toyota BZ4X so far. But yeah, we got some surprises this week out of them.
Yeah, and Subarus are like one of the other things that kind of makes me think Subaru would do well with EVs is that there are some states where Subarus are like every other car. And
oh yeah,
those states also happen to be some of the biggest ones for EVs. So Subarus are super popular in both like Vermont and Colorado, two states where EVs make up pretty good market share. So it's nice to see that an updated Solterra made its debut this week. This is Subaru's only EV so far. It's a compact crossover that was always like kind of just okay. It kind of falls into the category of like buy one if you can get a really great deal on it, similar to the Toyota BZ4X, which it's based on, but now it's getting a lot better. What's new in the Solterra, Patrick?
Yeah, you know, when Toyota came out with its updated EVs in March, the BZ4X, like we kind of expected this, like Subaru would do its like, yeah, our turn edition here, but yeah. Like, wow, I'm really impressed with what I'm seeing. The new Solterra, better performance, better battery efficiency, better different styling. We'll get to that in a second. And better better cabin comfort. You now get a 74.7 kilowatt hour battery, which is a bigger battery than before. And it's boosted way up to 285 miles of range. That's a hell of a jump from the old Solterra, which was 227. So we're talking 25% increase and almost 60 miles of range, 60. Like that's a difference between going from like one city to another in range. Like that's awesome.
Yeah. The bass just went from it went from like kind of like, you know, kind of not justifiable to like pretty good amounts of range, you know? Like pretty not competitive to pretty competitive.
Yeah, 285 means, you know, you're careful, you grease it a bit, you got good weather that day. You could hit 300 easily and something like that. Easily. The base Solterra puts out 233 horsepower, which is whatever. Now there's an XT, you know, it's a drawing on the Subaru names there for the XT. That puts out 338 horsepower. Now we're talking 0 to 60 in under 5 seconds. You know, and it's standard all-wheel drive and snow and mud modes because you're buying a Subaru and you want it to do that kind of stuff. Has battery preconditioning, which the old car's really bad at, which means, you know, it can heat the battery up on cold days to charge faster. So a lot has been fixed here. But then there's the way it looks. And, what do we think there, Tim?
It's not great. I think the one thing that was kind of okay about the Solterra before was the, like, it looked fine. It looked fine. It looked good. I think the interior was good too, but like there was nothing wrong with the style. And this mid-cycle. I wish it was mid-century. This mid-cycle.
Sweet, yeah.
Yeah. This mid-cycle refresh is not great. Like the whole kind of front end of it has almost nothing going on. It's just all sort of body color. And I think it didn't help that the press photos we got were the car in white. So it just kind of looked big white sort of blob. I don't know. Not the best mid-cycle refresh, if you ask me.
I want to see more of them in person before I render a final judgment. But like just throughout my time covering cars, whenever they do those like mid-cycle updates and like, oh, the car gets a new face to match the face of the other cars now. But it was designed years before that. Like, it almost never works. It's always awkward, and it's always kind of weird. There are very few cars that pull that off, like gas or otherwise. But we'll see about that one. I often wonder, like, what kind of vision plan they offer the design team at Subaru. Because, like it's, aesthetics has never really been that company's strong suit. It's just it's good at other things. But then we had a really big surprise at the auto show. The Subaru Trail Seeker, which, what a great name, by the way. I figured that this thing would be like the Subaru version of the Toyota CHR Plus, which is the other new EV they showed off a month ago. And that's like a more compact, kind of coupe-like, you know, cousin of the BZ4X. But I was wrong. I was completely wrong. And as Tim Levin will tell you, that's never happened before. Right? Right, Tim?
Yeah. What's funny is you wrote this whole blog about theorizing that it would be a Subaru version of the CHR Plus. And meanwhile, I had in my inbox just like the embargoed materials about what it actually was going to be, which I had not looked at and had not shown you. So both I and you brought shame on the family.
Yeah, this could have been fixed with like one email, but that's how we roll it inside EV spam. No, what's neat about the Trail Seeker is it's actually bigger. It's not smaller like the CHR Plus is. It's a bigger car than the Solterra and the BZ4X. I did not see that coming. It's not a three-row SUV, but it's a bigger version of that platform. It's a whole 6 inches longer. It's an inch taller. It looks better for sure than the updated Solterra. It's kind of this like Outback wagon-ish, like a big wagon deal. But it's also got the same battery, you know, 74.7 kilowatt hours. They claim 260 miles of range on a single charge. Also, it does 0 to 60 in 4.3 seconds, which is like would smoke the crap out of my old modified WRX. I mean, just like by a good second and change. So, you know, let the rally car boys, you know, sit with that one for a bit. You know, that's something there. Also, both of those cars get a Tesla NACS plug from the factory, like the Tesla stop plug. So they'll be able to use the Tesla supercharger stations. They have upped the fast charging speeds on both of these. Subaru won't give us an exact number yet, but they say 10 to 80% in 35 minutes or less. I think it'll probably do better than that. But this is quite an upgrade for this brand, like a really serious upgrade. And like the Trail Seeker sounds really awesome. You know, like what do you think, man?
Yeah, I think it is a big upgrade. I think one of the big problems in the EV market is just a lack of choice. Like, there just aren't enough EVs that suit enough people. And brand is a big part of that, right? Like, you have like my family, who my parents like aren't car people, but like all they do is buy Subaru Outbacks, and like they're not necessarily going to just venture into another brand just to buy an EV. But like, if you come out with a electric version of a Subaru Outback, they might do it. And that's kind of what this Trail Seeker is. And I think this is a big level up for Subaru, and it'll get a lot more people to consider it as an EV brand. Okay, moving on. Michigan Senator Alyssa Slotkin is seeking a total ban on Chinese cars coming into America. Her new bill would create a, quote, national security review process for cars and parts made by Chinese companies. The argument here is basically that cars are becoming increasingly internet connected. They have all types of sensors on them, like cameras and even maybe LiDAR, and that basically all that data they're collecting could be used by an adversary to spy on Americans. And that's, she argues, a national security risk. I'm going to put it in her words. She said in a statement that Chinese vehicles could collect huge amounts of data on America and Americans, which poses a significant national security threat. Americans' personal data, our infrastructure, Michigan's auto industry, and auto jobs are all at stake. Chinese vehicles, which are dirt cheap thanks to state subsidies, could collect full motion video of sensitive sites, 3D mapping, and geolocation of individual drivers, all of which could be sent back to Beijing. So that's the argument here. What do you think? Does Senator Slotkin have a point here?
Yeah, she definitely came out both barrels on this over the weekend. Alyssa Slotkin, freshman Democratic senator from Michigan herself, a former CIA officer. It's a really interesting background. This is also her first bill that she's introduced in the Senate as in her time as a senator, which, by the way, she did get some heat from on social media, being like, this is what you're working on right now as a Democrat with other things going on, which is kind of funny, but we won't go into that here. It's like I said, both barrels, because, part of this statement she put out, she was like, I would personally lay down on the border to stop Chinese cars from coming to America, which is really intense. And also, they'd probably be shipped here via boats and not coming over a border. But I think this is an interesting discussion to have on a lot of levels. And, Slotkin and also Trump are not the first elected officials in America to crack down on Chinese cars, specifically Chinese EVs, under the auspices of national security. Like, people forget this, but around a year ago, Joe Biden did the same thing. He hit Chinese EV imports with 100% tariffs, like long before tariffs entered the vernacular at the level they do now. Biden did that too. So like, there's always been this kind of national security concern about cars from China. Here's what I'm wondering, right? I'm curious, how is this a real threat, a proven threat, or is it a theoretical one? And I don't know. Like, I kind of want to see the receipts at this point. Like, if it is a real proven threat, like if there have been studies done, if the NSA or our intelligence agencies have been like, yeah, we've studied these cars and how they work, we see where the data is being transmitted to, or there's ties in these companies that concern us. Like, I think that they need to be more forthright with the American people about that. Because we're at a time where, like, I think American consumers do want cleaner cars, they want more efficient cars, and they want cheaper cars. Because everything in our market is too damn expensive, right? And it's like, this is a way to do all of that. And it's like, if there is a really true valid and honest to God national security concern here, besides just like, well, stuff from China is scary, I think they owe it to the people, to like this, ostensibly free market we have, to like show why they're thinking that way,
Yeah, I'm with you there. I do think that like you said, this isn't the first push to do this. So the Biden Commerce Department actually did basically exactly this. They determined that Chinese connected car technology and Chinese autonomous vehicle technology posed an undue threat to national security. Like, for this exact reason, they came out and they were like, what if Chinese government could spy on people, or map critical infrastructure, or even take control of cars, and like you know, brick all the cars in America or make them do something crazy. It sounds a little bit outlandish, but like cars are also becoming that connected now. Like that is a feasible thing. And to me, I think like, not a national security expert, but I think like if China had the capability to do that, wouldn't they? Like, wouldn't an adversary potentially be tapping into, you know, cameras on a car to spy on somebody that they didn't like? It's not like totally out of the realm of possibility given the capabilities of this technology. And just to kind of close the loop there, like that rule went into effect or was finalized early this year.
The Biden rule.
Yeah, the Biden rule on banning Chinese-made connected vehicles, connectivity systems, and autonomous driving software. And that's not fully in effect yet. It goes into effect later this decade, but that should basically ban companies with strong connections to China from selling cars here. And that even includes, the Biden administration said, it includes car companies that make cars. If you're a Chinese company that comes and makes cars in America, your cars would be banned based on this.
Right.
So there are already strong rules here.
And it's just like that's the official argument. And then there's the sort of unofficial argument. Although Senator Slotkin goes into this a little bit too in her statement, she's like, yeah, Michigan auto jobs, American auto jobs are at stake. And like that to me is the real impetus for doing this, because nobody in America wants a street fight with BYD, whether you're Ford or GM or Toyota or Mazda or Volkswagen or any of them. Like that's a very powerful new player that they don't want to deal with. So if like national security is the reason they're kept out, great. One less thing to worry about today, right?
Yeah.
But I just think that history has shown us, you know, how some of these new players are able to enter our markets. You know, like there were a lot of trade tensions with Japan in the 1980s, and Ronald Reagan hit them with intense tariffs too. And like they found ways around that. Like they built factories in America. So like I do think that like these Chinese automakers will find some way into America. They'll strike some deal or something to do it. But it also shows like how kind of behind as a country we are when it comes to regulating technology, which we know that we are. You know, in my mind, it's a little bit like the TikTok ban. It's like, okay, we're worried about a Chinese social media network. We're going to ban this one company. We're not going to reform how we do data privacy. We're not going to require that data for certain companies be kept in the United States. We're just going to go after them. And it's like there could be a framework here where like, okay, BYD, you can sell cars in America. This third-party American company controls all the data, and you got to build in Ohio or Michigan or Tennessee or whatever. That seems like a fair compromise to me. But I'm not sure that's the intention of this bill. And again, I'm not, I swear I'm not like simping for Chinese car companies or in the tank for them one way or another. Like, I just think that it's like, if this whole access is going to be cut off to Americans, like there should be a real explanation of where the threat is before that decision's made, you know?
Yeah. And I think there are both. I think the U.S. government has made both arguments, right? Like they're not solely saying like, it's a national security issue, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, the Biden administration quadrupled the tariff on Chinese EVs to 100% in its final days. And they basically said, they were like, that's because, you know, and this is their argument. They were like, China is unfairly subsidizing its EV industry, which, you know, you can argue whether that's true or not, but like, you can argue whether it's unfair or not. But China has dumped huge amounts of money into its EV industry, really grown that industry into a global kind of Goliath. And the Biden administration was like, look, they have this overcapacity issue where they are now dumping EVs at low cost around the world. And like, we don't want that to happen in America, because you know what happens then is the big three like can't compete, because you can't compete against Chinese cars that come in at $20,000. So
yeah,
you know,
which is what they're really afraid of. Yeah.
Right, totally. And so they do use both, like basically Chinese cars, Chinese EVs are kind of banned here on two fronts, on the national security side and the kind of you know, anti-competitiveness argument. Both of those are being used. But I think that the risk is we get left behind, Like, I think you're exactly right when you say, like, there could be a kind of more comprehensive framework here. Like, I think there's an argument to be made that if we're going to just shut out the cheapest and most high-tech electric vehicles on the planet, we need to do a lot of work in the U.S. to subsidize our own industry, or else, yeah, you know, we're going to end up like Cuba, or maybe not Cuba, but we're going to end up just left behind where we have the kind of like expensive bad EVs and the rest of the world has the really cool, really advanced ones. And that's also a bad outcome, right? You don't want American companies to be behind globally.
Yeah. And that's like Kevin Williams makes that argument on our team. It's like, it's like the business model in America is like, we just need you people to shut up and keep buying F-150s. Okay. Can you do that for us? And like, the world is moving at a faster pace than that model allows. So we'll see where this goes. I don't think the Trump administration is going to do China any favors, certainly now. But I also think that if we're doing trade deals with them or anything's on the table, I wouldn't preclude something like this too. So interesting times. I'm going to China next week. Actually, I'm going to go to the Shanghai Auto Show and see some of the stuff for myself. So we'll see what shakes out there. You know.
Can you bring me back a BYD Seagull, please? Just yeah. Stuff it in your carry-on.
Yeah, I'm gonna fly it back because they can fly, they can swim. Remember, there's just do whatever you need, man. We're there.
Yeah, fly me an XPeng Aero HT, that crazy like drone car.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. The six-wheeled drone flying car. It launches a drone out the back of it. Yeah, I think that would have enough range to get over the Pacific Ocean.
Probably.
Only one way to find out, you know. Now it's time for Plus Minus, our segment where we talk about who's up and who's down in the EV world this week. Tim, who you got for me?
I have a minus, and it is GM's BrightDrop division. This is GM's commercial electric van, and apparently it's not doing so well. There were reports this week that GM is hitting pause on BrightDrop production for at least 5 months. At least 1,200 workers will be laid off, according to reports. It's unfortunate for a relatively new division of GM. Like, there were kind of signs that this was happening before. BrightDrop used to be kind of a separate entity, then they folded it into Chevrolet. Apparently their commercial van business is sort of struggling. And one thing that jumped out to me in this story, I think it was from the Detroit Free Press, was that before incentives, BrightDrop vans cost about $74,000, which
I didn't know that. Jeez, that's a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
You can see how that would be a tough pill to swallow for, you know, a small business deciding to electrify its fleet, especially when you can get a Ford E-Transit or like a Rivian commercial van for a lot less than that. So, yeah.
It's if you're a small business owner, that's a no-go. And then if you're like a big company that buys these things in bulk, like fleets, like, you know, UPS or FedEx or whatever, like you want the cheapest deal possible. Like that's why like Ford's electric van program, Rivian's electric van program, all doing pretty well. GM isn't. No one was buying them. Oh, and on top of everything else, the BrightDrop van is made in Canada. So, like, right now, like, you know, womp womp. You know, that's it for that poor thing. I hope they figure it out.
But GM is also doing pretty well in other ways.
Yeah, my plus this week is actually everything else about General Motors and its electric vehicle program, besides the van. But they had this great feature story in Bloomberg Business Week that came out this week. And it's about how the company turned around its battery strategy. It had a really disastrous 2023, but it's getting costs down and it's trying new battery chemistries and battery constructions. It's hired a lot of battery experts and outside people and Tesla veterans, which is kind of a big thing for GM because it traditionally doesn't hire outsiders all that much in top roles. And, you know, the story's about, like, how a lot of competing car companies have slowed down in the EV race. But GM's like, no, like, we do see this as the future. And, like, we're getting there. We're continuing to invest in it. We're going to be cooked if we don't. So, like, they seem to be making the right moves with batteries. And that's how you win here. If you control batteries and get battery costs down, then you can win the future. And like, I feel like all these moves are paying off, and I say good for them. So, you know, it's good to see. All right, that's it for us this week. Thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We'll be back next Friday. Today's show is produced by Michael Perkins and is brought to you by the Motorsport Network.
Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and send us your questions about the EV world to podcast@insideevs.com. See you next time.
Tim, did you notice that the pets didn't interfere with us after we made it clear that we were displeased with them? They did a good job of listening this time, I think.
Yeah, they're finally learning.
They're finally learning, yeah. Pretty soon they'll be smarter than us and maybe hosting the podcast instead of us. Terrifying. Terrifying to think about.
See you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get 5 Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.